Remember that blizzard of dust that covered downtown Manhattan and parts of Brooklyn following 9/11? Paul J. Lioi, an environmental and exposure scientist, was one of the first scientists to collect samples of it from Ground Zero. And in his new book, Dust, the inside story of the of its role in the September 11th aftermath, he writes, "If the events of the day had quickly resolved themselves, we probably would have looked at the WTC dust more like a curiosity, sort of like how we reacted to moon dust. But as he details in his book, we now know that the same dust played a sinister role in what happened following the attacks and, among other things, is responsible for what has come to be called the WTC cough." His book is published by Roman and Littlefield, and I'm pleased to welcome Paul Lioi to our show today. Hello.
Good afternoon.
You write that within 24 hours of the attacks, people were calling you to ask your opinion about what might be in the air around Ground Zero. What were you working on at the time?
Oh, at the time, I was doing my normal research on things like lead, pesticides in homes, in the environment, and how people are exposed to it, how they get in contact with it. So at that time, it was just the normal environmental issues of the day.
Were people mostly concerned about asbestos?
No, people do get concerned about asbestos.
No, I mean after the collapse. Yeah.
Oh, sure. It was purely because of the fact it was the first thing that people could measure. And you have to look at it from the vantage point that people were upset. They were trying to figure out a way to understand what was going on, and asbestos monitors were there, and they could measure certain quantity of it. No one really thought about what would be the consequences of breathing something other than asbestos, which is a material that causes diseases 20 to 30 years after exposure.
You'd seen the images being broadcast from Lower Manhattan. Were you immediately concerned when you saw the debris floating in the air?
I think when I first saw the debris floating in the air, my consciousness was more toward, you know, the people who were suffering, and the fact that I at that particular point in time we almost thought there were 15,000 people who might die, and so it wasn't really focused on the dust in the first few minutes. It was focused at that point on the horror.
Mm-hmm. But I was standing in front of the municipal building, which is just a few blocks away from the World Trade Center site, when the first tower came down and people came running from it covered in what looked like fluffy snow. It didn't look like ordinary dust.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. In fact, that's with the images that I began to look at later on in the day made me realize that, you know, this isn't dust that you would find in a bathroom or in a dusty yard. There's something eerie about it, and you saw some of the images, and it looked like, as I showed in the book, a couple of these images make it look like snow after a blizzard.
Slightly pink snow.
Yes, it was. At the beginning, it was slightly pink. Over time, it has aged to be mostly gray, but it was slightly pink at the time.
And didn't it have a distinct smell?
The dust didn't have a distinct smell, but I assume some of the volatile materials in it and, you know, the burning fires of burning plastic would leave a residual odor. And I think anyone who's been down in near Ground Zero, lived there, passed through there after the first hours, they knew what the distinctive World Trade Center smell was at that point in
time.
Well,
when we were allowed to go back to our building in October, we assumed that that smell was burning flesh, but we were told that it wasn't.
I think at that time it was probably mostly burning everything, and no one could make a decision. No one could tell you what it was or wasn't. But it was a very distinctive odor, which I now call an odor related to the kind of materials that we use and the kind of activities that we participate in all our modern buildings, because this is a different kind of issue than what would have happened from a collapse or a burning of a building in the early or mid-20th century.
Was taking dust samples a time-sensitive procedure?
In some ways it was, because
how soon were you able to gain access?
Within a week. And you really wanted to get there as soon as possible, because you never know what's going to happen to the dust, like the rain. In fact, one of our dust samples did actually get rained on, but actually in the end it turned out to be a good thing because it learned about how the pH changes when water interacts with the World Trade Center dust. So in one way it was a bad thing, but in one way it was a good thing at the time.
Wasn't there some confusion as to the chain of command among the various agencies? Were they all welcoming of you?
No. I mean, some of them welcomed us with open arms, like the Port Authority, but then you turn the corner, and as I explained in the book, a major came up to me and he said, "No more pictures, put it away, or I will put you away for 24 hours. And that
was... what was his reasoning?
I think fear. I think the uncertainty. From my vantage point, sure, you know, you do what you have to do because there was so much going on and the things were chaos. I mean, anyone who lived here, who lived and breathed the air and just looked at the situation for the next weeks, months, would be able to tell you that there was chaos. And the chaos was controlled, but there was chaos.
Well, were you concerned that you were taking evidence from a crime scene?
No, I didn't think I was taking evidence.
Because DNA might have been mixed in with the dust samples.
I went at length in the book to explain that based upon the calculations we did, and even though there were 3,000 souls lost, and those 3,000 souls will never see us again, compared to the millions of tons of material there, the mass of material was minuscule. Now, you would find body parts, which they did, and you will find other parts of a person's life, like a shoe and whatever. But the techniques don't exist yet to parse out DNA in that type of sample. They may in the future, but at this point, at least at the point in time when we were measuring, it wasn't going to be possible.
You say that you were struck by two things you saw down there. The first had to do with respirators.
Yes, there were respirators in bins.
Were you wearing a respirator?
Yes, I was.
But there were other people who just were hanging them around their necks, weren't they?
You had all kinds of levels of respirator use. Some people were wearing them. Some people weren't wearing them. Some were wearing around the necks. Some got advice to wear them, told to go pick them up. Other people just never were informed. It was a very, I think one of the things we learned from 911 is that you really do have to deal with the respiratory protection issue. You may not be able to deal with it in the first 2 or 3 minutes or hour because it's, you know, a crisis. It's an event that occurs. It's very quick. But once you get your hands around it or grapple with the situation a little bit, you say, well, we have dust there. We need respirators. We need to get them as quickly as possible.
And are they effective?
Depends. Some respirators are, some aren't. If they're for the proper purpose, yes, they are. If they're not, they will not be. One of the issues that we did observe and still is an outstanding issue is we need better communication in respirators that are used in the field and associated with handling precarious situations.
You say also it was very difficult to communicate at the scene when you were wearing a respirator.
Sure. In fact,
are they developing new respirators that would make that easier?
You'd have to ask NIOSH that because I don't know where they are in their development process. I assume John Howard could give you a better feel for that information.
Part of your concern about the air quality in Lower Manhattan was that it was contaminated with aerosols.
Well, that's...
Why that?
Well, it's not... Particles, when they're distributed in the air, are basically an aerosol. But we were looking at it from the standpoint that the aerosol would contain not only the particles in normal air, but with the combustion going on, at least in the first, initial period, you'd have combustion products of incomplete combustion. But there were no measurement devices available. You think about it, who was standing around, with a measurement device saying, gee whiz, we're going to have a fire and it's going to be intense. We should be measuring things. It just wasn't there. But the fact that we didn't measure the gases leaves us with an unknown in terms of what was inhaled by the firefighters and the rescue workers.
But you say the most dangerous exposure period was in the day or so that immediately followed the attack. And Weren't some fire department first responders monitored for dust exposure from relatively early on?
Yes, they were. And David Prezant published the first paper on the World Trade Center cough, although now he looks back and he says he should call it World Trade Center disease. But I think the World Trade Center cough was the right answer at that time because it actually started focusing people on something other than long-term disease, short-term exacerbations of asthma and sinusitis were, I think, something we really had to consider at the time.
Well, there's a new study that suggests cancer rates are higher among 9/11 firefighters.
Have
you seen the study?
I've seen the study. It presents the first information, but cancer is a very tough thing to, you might say, categorize for what the cause is because there are so many different cancers.
And so I think it's not just lung cancer?
No, there's lung cancer, there's prostate cancer. So you have to – that takes a lot more work and a lot more population. So at this point in time, I think the best thing to say about that study, it's done. It says that there is a possibility for an increase. But to me, right now, the next thing to do is to go out and look at it in terms of the entire population and see, in fact, if there is any increase in cancer.
But it would be the dust getting into our lungs and then creating some toxicity in the body?
That would be part of it. There's also the part of it of the gases getting in the body, which we, again, was an unknown. And also there's part of it in genetics. I mean, everyone is different, so therefore it's the interaction of the individual. You know that with people who are smokers alone, not everybody who smokes gets cancer. So there are a whole host of issues that one has to think about.
So when you analyzed the dust, what did you find that it was primarily made up of?
Cement. That's because
so that didn't surprise you?
It didn't surprise me, but we were caught a little off guard because when we did some of the measurements with the cement, we also looked at the pH, and the pH, which is the level of acidity or basic nature of the material, was high. It wasn't neutral. So when it was around 9 or 11, you were getting a pH which could irritate at least the upper airways of the lung because that's where most of the stuff would deposit initially. And I think that's why the association with the World Trade Center cough was reasonable because it allowed me to start thinking about what kind of aerosols would impact initially because it was very unusual. Most of the particles we breathe are really, really tiny.
And then the fires continued all the way until December.
Right.
That would have affected the air quality. Did we get lucky in regard to the initial movement of the smoke plume?
Yes, we did. It was very, very intense, very hot. And so even though there was some of the plume that went to Brooklyn, a lot of it went over Brooklyn. And so we were very fortunate. Also, the wind direction was such that it went to the southeast, which put it out to sea much more rapidly than if it had been blowing into New Jersey.
We mentioned earlier that the particles were large. What would happen if – could they have been finer, or is this something we could have predicted?
It would be very hard to say that they could be finer. There is a proportion, very small percentage of the mass, which is fine, which is about 1%. But it would have been hard to predict them being very small for a very simple reason. This was a mechanical generation process. It was a collapse. And so therefore, the material has collapsed. They disintegrated into particles, but they disintegrated into particles that would be, larger than the real fine particles that you would create if you were, burning something or welding a material when you have these little fine particles coming off. So you could almost predict it would be, but what really surprised me was how many large particles there, and the fact that these hung around for a while and were breathed and resuspended when the trucks and the firefighters and the police cars were roaming up and down the streets in southern Manhattan for their important purpose of trying to help and deal with things. They were regenerating the dust from the surface.
You've donated some of the items that you wore that day to the National September 11th Memorial Museum. Do you feel that your story or the scientific side of the story has largely gone untold?
No, I think I think it has not gone untold for a very simple reason, that a lot of the scientific issues that we're dealing with is still being dealt with in terms of the health effects being being suffered by the individuals who are under the care of either New York City Fire Department or Mount Sinai or our folks down at UMDNJ.
A listener wonders whether construction workers working on the new WTC buildings are in danger of in terms of exposure to resuspended dust.
In terms of World Trade Center dust, mm-hmm. I would doubt it.
Because it's already gone by now?
I think it's been gone by now.
Do you have some of the dust still in your possession?
Yes, I do.
Are you conducting studies on it? Does it change?
It's changed dramatically. I mean, the color is now gray. It's no longer pink. Some of the organics have changed to another, to other oxidized products. The pH has gone down a little bit. So, yes, it has changed. I look at more as a historical artifact. In fact, we're going to be donating, hopefully we'll be donating more of the dust to the World Trade Center Museum and Memorial.
Paul J. Leoy is a professor and vice chair of the Department of Environmental and Occupational Medicine at UMDNJ Robert Wood Johnson Medical School. He's also deputy director for government relations and director of exposure science at the Environmental and Occupational Health Sciences Institute at Rutgers University. His book, Dust, is published by Roman and Littlefield. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.